The following program deals with adult themes. It includes recorded material that describes body parts in slang terms. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to New World Notes, edited by yours truly, Kenneth Doust, coming to you from the Connecticut River Valley, from what used to be the capital of American firearms manufacturing, and at least a capital of American bicycle manufacturing, and steam boiler manufacturing, and typewriter manufacturing, and machine tool manufacturing, and jet engine manufacturing, and the capital of manufacturing of insurance policies. Now we're not even that. We're not even the unemployment capital, though I'm told the governor has a plan. The prosperity that all that capitalism brought about is still there, but it's being concentrated in fewer and fewer hands. Relatedly, this week we focus on homeland security. There's going to be a lot of comedy and humor in the show, as well as a bit of gloom and doom. Let's start with some gloom and doom. Here in central Connecticut, despite the efforts of the media to confuse, mislead, and pacify everybody, I think the working class has pretty much caught on. We are being shafted, our futures destroyed, so that the obscenely rich may become still richer. And this antisocial plot by the plutocrats is being aided, abetted, indeed enforced, by all three branches of the government. The public justifiably is angry. The government of the people, by the people, and for the people could be working to assuage this anger by creating jobs, driving wages back up, reducing foreclosures, fostering unions, strengthening Social Security, re-regulating the out-of-control financial industry, reining in the Pentagon. Instead, the government is handing the Treasury over to Wall Street and the Pentagon, declaring that the executive branch has ever-increasing police state powers, and stripping citizens of their civil liberties protections, including habeas corpus, First Amendment rights, and Fourth Amendment protections against unreasonable searches and seizures. Under a smokescreen of pure blather about terrorism, the police are cracking down on law-abiding, peaceful protesters, as happened just a few weeks back in Minneapolis-St. Paul. The Obama administration is asserting that it has the right to assassinate any American citizen, including here in the, quote, homeland, unquote. The administration is claiming the power to keep any American citizen in prison forever, even if the person has been acquitted of charges by a jury of his peers. There's some change you can believe in. The good news is now the middle class is getting ticked off. The powers that be wrote off the poor back in the 1980s, during the Carter and Reagan administrations. They finished writing off the working class in the 1990s with the help of the Clinton administration. Now the middle class is on its way down and out, but it will take some time to polish it off. In the meantime, politicians still need to use caution in thumbing their noses at the middle class. One place the middle class can be found in numbers is the airport. And here the state has overplayed its hand with its gratuitous displays of police state tactics and power. Even after decades of watching television, even the middle class is sharp enough to see that groping nuns and your 7-year-old daughter has nothing to do with preventing terrorism, and everything to do with flaunting the power and control of the police state and the powerlessness of the citizen. Later in this show, commentator Glenn Ford will point out that middle-class whites are getting just a taste of the stop-and-frisk indignities the police have been meting out to young men of color millions of times a year. And Paul Craig Roberts shows the larger picture. The whole supposed war on terror is a fake and a fraud and a tool for destroying what little democracy we have left. But I did promise some levity and humor, so let's have some of that, as we return to the airport.
From the front, between your legs, and from the back, twice.
Twice?
That's right. It will be over before you know it.
Hello. This is Chris and Throffengate again for the news, but is it, and who cares? This month, the boys upstairs wanted me to go undercover at one of the nation's airports to find out about the new body scanners. Just how are people handling this new invasion of private space for the phony war on terror? And how are the workers handling it after they get all personal with the American public?
Left. Any respect. Awesome.
And any?
And welcome to CCNN, the Catching Cupping Nuts Network.
It's come to our attention that the fabrics of your clothes can contain high explosives, so you know how that goes. First we searched and we x-rayed you. We took the shoes off of your feet. Then we took away your carry-on luggage, all the snacks and drinks that you eat. Now you'll have to remove your clothing. We do not mean to get rude. Just shut your mouth, start to strip. You gotta get naked, dude. Get naked on the plane. You gotta get naked on the plane.
So I said, are the techniques legal? And a legal team says, yes, they are. And I said, use them.
Now, Mr. President, shouldn't we be using this at the airport? Waterboarding would be the next thing we should do.
I think it should be. It's fine. Instead of wasting all that time with the machines, you torture them to see if there's anything in the bag. Why waste the money on the machines? You torture the son of a bitch.
And how cheap is it just to use water?
Just that it's cheap, it's fun. A lot of excitement.
Oh boy, yeah. Aren't they fine?
Johnny Taylor said,
we can do that out here, but if you touch my junk, I'm going to have you arrested.
That statement went viral on the World Wide Web. So some guy called Michael Adams turned the whole incident into a rap song.
Let's get this on. About to miss my flight. Come on.
I went to the airport to catch my flight. The TSA put me in the naked body scanner line. I don't want radiation, so I opted out. But when they grabbed my man, junk, I couldn't help myself. I had to shout, I had to shout, I had to get my message out. Man, don't touch my junk. Don't touch my junk. I have to arrest
any and Rylina.
But I'm the president, aren't I?
Yes, Barack. Step over this way.
Oh. Well, what's this?
Just put your feet in the shoe patterns on the floor, Barack.
Is this an airport scanner, Michelle?
Former head of Homeland Security Chertoff sent one over, Barack.
Oh.
He heard you say you'd never been scanned before and you didn't know what it was like.
Because I'm the president.
Put your hands up there.
Okay.
And there.
Uh-huh. Ooh.
All right, Barack, empty your pockets.
No, that won't be necessary, Michelle, because my pockets, you see, are... Oh, ow.
Just do it.
Well, what's that, a cattle prod?
It's an electrified security wand. Pocket contents in this dish now, Barack.
All right. All right.
Is this what it looks like, Barack?
It's a cigarette lighter, Michelle.
Why do you have a cigarette lighter in your pocket?
Well, in case I run into your mother somewhere in the White House and... She needs a light for her reefer, Michelle.
Good answer. I didn't think you had one.
I always do, Michelle.
Very courteous. Mother likes that.
I like to be prepared. I was a Boy Scout, Michelle.
You still are.
Thank you.
Naked on the plane. You must get naked on the plane. To fight that war on terror, gotta get naked on the plane.
Naked. A fun 5-minute audio collage put together by veteran radio guy Scooter over at KPFT in Houston. That's the station back in the good old days that kept having its transmitter blown up by the John Birch Society. So they must be doing something right. We heard a snippet of the late 2010 hit, Don't Touch My Junk. If time permits, we'll hear the whole thing. The song is some witty and astute political insights, which you don't hear a lot in pop music these days, but used to. The song also has what's got to be the world's worst slang term for male genitalia, junk. And if there's a female counterpart, please don't tell me what it is. But Don't Touch My Junk is a real quote, reportedly shouted at a TSA goon by a hapless traveler named John Tyner, captured on video by someone, released on YouTube, and then turned into a song by one Michael Adams. But first, let's hear from Glenn Ford of Black Agenda Report. Ford says to the white middle class at the airport, "Don't like being stopped, frisked, and groped by the cops? Well, welcome to Oakland. Welcome to the south side of Chicago. Welcome to Bedford-Stuyvesant. And welcome to Philadelphia."
Critics of the Obama administration's escalating intrusions on the dignity and violations of the privacy of air travelers are certainly correct in raising holy hell with the voyeurs and bullies that run the Homeland Security apparatus. The president's men are a nasty little bunch who seem to respond to every hint of danger by shouting "strip" and fondling everyone within reach. But I must admit that I'm not personally overly upset at the government's deployment of machinery that electronically renders one naked, or the prospect of more frequent and intrusive pat-downs. As a black male who is often perceived as Latino or Middle Eastern, I expect to get stopped and questioned, pulled from the crowd and patted down. My teenage and young adult years coincided with the frequent hijacking of flights to Cuba. I fit the profile. That coincided with the war on drugs that never ended, a war that treated me like an enemy combatant and still does. A pair of narcotics detectives used to stop me without fail among thousands of other train passengers each week, same time, same day, as I passed through Union Station commuting from New York to Washington. La Migra, the immigration authorities, have challenged me in D.C., all dressed up for an expensive business lunch at high noon on K Street, demanding to know if I was a citizen. I've been pulled off a bus full of other journalists on the tarmac at the airport in Vienna, Austria, by machine-gun-toting police, for no other reason than my physical type. My hometown neighborhood is a designated drug zone, like every black neighborhood in Jersey City, New Jersey, where anyone can be stopped and questioned about their reasons for being in the area, where one is presumed guilty until the police decide you might not be. I spend much of my time in New York City, where about 600,000 pedestrians, the vast majority of them black or Latino and male, will be accosted by cops by the end of this year. There is an 8-block area in Bedford-Stuyvesant, Brooklyn, where 50,000 stops were made over 2 years, many if not most involving the same black, male neighborhood residents over and over again. But it gets worse. In Philadelphia, a city one-sixth the size of New York, at least 200,000 mostly black male pedestrians are stopped every year. That means if Philly were New York-sized, the cops would be stopping and frisking 1.2 million people on the streets each year, twice as many as in the Big Apple. This is stop and frisk gone wild, used as a weapon of racial bullying and control, and as an intake valve for black mass incarceration, sending huge proportions of black males into institutions where they don't render you naked electronically, but up close and personal, at any and all times the prison authorities see fit, and where visiting family members are subject to have their bodily orifices explored. So yes, federal search policies at airports are a sign of a growing police state. But the police state has long been in effect in black America, so long it is experienced as routine. I fear that some of those who recoil at heightened airport security also believe that the people in the Bed-Stuys of America get what they deserve. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford. On the web, go to www.blackagendareport.com.
Let's get this on. About to miss my flight. Come on.
I went to the airport to catch my flight. The TSA put me in the naked body scanner line. I don't want radiation, so I opted out. But when they grabbed my man junk, I couldn't help myself. I had to shout. I had to shout. I had to get my message out. I said, don't touch my junk. Don't touch my junk. I'll have you arrested. You touch my junk. Don't touch my junk. Ain't your lovely lady lumps. I don't want to be molested, so don't touch my junk. I went back wearing a Scottish kilt. I bought three Viagra to make sure my stuff would not wilt. When it came my turn for the nasty pat down, they thought I had a weapon. So they don't touch my junk.
Can't touch this.
Don't touch my junk.
Can't touch this.
I'll have you arrested. Don't touch my junk. Don't touch my junk. My heart, my heart, my heart. I don't want to be molested, so don't touch my junk.
Now who put these morons with a badge in charge and gave them the right to molest us in the name of security?
Don't touch my junk.
Can't touch this.
Don't touch my junk.
Can't touch this. They x-rayed my bags and then they paddled down my elephant trunk.
Then up my shorts and went down my pants. This ain't romance. No, it's the TSA hustle. They felt me up, and they put me down. They squeezed my butt in that TSA hustle.
Oh, this is happening in the land of the free. Alex Jones was right. I'm gonna smuggle a copy of the Bill of Rights next to my body, so when they reach down there, they get a handful of Fourth Amendment.
Lordy, lordy, I declare Big Brother's in my underwear. Fly to London, fly to France, big sis checking out my underpants. Up my shorts, can't touch, went down my pants.
Can't touch this.
This ain't romance, no, it's the TSA hustle. They dumped me up like you were my personal physician. Put your hands in the air in the surrender position. This ain't security, and this ain't sex.
Can't touch some other kind of tyranny.
And now you're next.
Now on to Paul Craig Roberts. Roberts is one of that dying breed, the old-fashioned, principled conservative. He used to be an editor of the Wall Street Journal, and he was assistant secretary of the Treasury back in the Reagan administration, for goodness sakes. As any principled conservative would be, Roberts is appalled at the destruction of constitutional government initiated by George W. Bush and company, and continued by Bush's successor and heir, Barack H. Obama and company. Here's an essay he published in Counterpunch, November 30th, Fabricating Terror. I've condensed it a little for radio. Fabricating Terror. Why does the FBI orchestrate fake terror plots? The latest one, at the end of November, snared Osman Mohammed, a Somali-American teenager, in Portland, Oregon. The Associated Press report is headlined, Somali-born teen plotted car bombing in Oregon. Well, not really, as the plot was orchestrated by federal agents. Quote, the bomb was an elaborate fake supplied by FBI agents, and the public was never in danger, authorities said, unquote. Nonetheless, the special agent in charge of the FBI in Oregon is quoted as saying, the threat was very real. The story arrives at its Kafkaesque high point when President Obama thanks the FBI for its diligence in saving us from the fake plot the FBI had fabricated. Documents released by the government show the sting operation began in June. Obviously, the targeted Portland teenager was not hot to trot. The FBI had to work on him for 6 months. If you are not too bright, and some tough-looking guys accost you and tell you that they are Al-Qaeda and expect your help in a terrorist operation, you might be afraid to say no. Or you might be thrilled to be part of a blowback against an America that is indifferent to their government's slaughter of your people. Whichever way it falls, it is unlikely that the ensnared person would ever have done anything beyond talk had the FBI not organized him into action. Since 9/11, the only domestic terrorist plot that I recall that was not obviously organized by the FBI is the Times Square plot, to which Faisal Shahzad pleaded guilty to trying to set off a car bomb in Manhattan. This plot, too, is suspicious. One would think that a real terrorist would have a real bomb, not a smoke bomb. Perhaps the most obvious of these cases is the Miami 7, a hapless group of Christian Zionist Muslims that were living quietly in a Florida warehouse awaiting biblical end times. Along came the FBI, posing as Al-Qaeda, and offered them $50,000. The FBI told them that they needed to blow up the Sears Tower in Chicago and various government buildings. Critics noted that the group had no weapons, no explosives. The Justice Department and media made a big show out of the militaristic boots worn by these hapless plotters. But the FBI had bought the boots for them. The biggest piece of evidence against the hapless group was that they had taken photos of targets in Florida. But the U.S. government had equipped them with cameras. The U.S. government even rented cars for its dupes to drive to take to the pictures. It turns out that the group only wanted the $50,000, but an American jury convicted them anyway. When the U.S. government has to go to such lengths to create terrorists out of hapless people, an undeclared agenda is being served. What could this agenda be? The answer is many agendas. One agenda is to justify wars of aggression that are war crimes under the Nuremberg Standard created by the U.S. government itself. One way to avoid war crimes charges is to create acts of terrorism that justify the naked aggressions against, quote, terrorist countries, unquote. Another agenda is to create a police state. A police state can control people who object to their impoverishment for the benefit of the super rich much more easily than can a democracy endowed with constitutional civil liberties. Another agenda is to get rich. Terror plots, whether real or orchestrated, have created a market for security. Michael Chertoff, former head of U.S. Homeland Security, is the lobbyist who represents Rapiscan, the company that manufactures the full-body porno scanners that, following the underwear bomber event, are now filling up U.S. airports. Homeland Security has announced that they are going to purchase the porno scanners for trains, buses, subways, courthouses, and sports events. Everyone has forgotten that the underwear bomber lacked required documents and was escorted aboard the airliner in Amsterdam by an official. Sidebar comment, New World Notes and its listeners have not forgotten, and we discussed these facts just last week. Back to the text. The war on terror provides an opportunity for a few well-connected people to become very rich. This despite the fact that everyone on the planet knows that it is not lactating mothers, children, elderly people in walkers and wheelchairs, members of Congress, members of the military, nuns, and so on, who are members of Al-Qaeda, plotting to bring a bomb aboard in their underwear, their shoes, their shampoo, and their face creams. Indeed, bombs aboard airliners are a rare event. What is it really all about? Could it be that the U.S. government needs terrorist events in order to completely destroy the U.S. Constitution? On November 24, National Public Radio broadcast this report. Quote, "Administration officials are looking at the possibility of codifying detention without trial and are awaiting legislation that is supposed to come out of Congress early next year." Of course, the legislation will not come out of Congress. It will be written by Homeland Security and the Justice Department. The impotent Congress will merely rubber stamp it. The obliteration of habeas corpus, the most necessary and important protection of liberty ever institutionalized by law, has become necessary for the U.S. government because a jury might acquit an alleged or mock terrorist or framed person whom the U.S. government has declared prior to the trial will be held forever in indefinite detention, even if acquitted by a U.S. court of law. The Attorney General of the United States has declared that any terrorist that he puts on trial, who is acquitted by a jury, will remain in detention regardless of the verdict. Such an event would reveal the total lawlessness of American justice. The United States of America, the city upon the hill, the light unto the world, has become Nazi Germany. It was the practice of the Gestapo to ignore court verdicts and to execute or to hold indefinitely the cleared defendant. The Obama regime is in the process of completing Dick Cheney's dream by legislating the legality of indefinite detention. This Nazi Gestapo policy is now the declared policy of the U.S. Department of Justice. Anyone who thinks the United States is a free society where people have liberty, freedom, and democracy is uninformed. So ends the article, Fabricating Terror, by Paul Craig Roberts. And I've got to say, when an aging lefty hippie wannabe like myself and a country club Republican like Roberts find ourselves seeing eye to eye on an issue, well, there's something happening here. What it is pretty clear, to paraphrase the old song. Somebody tell the self-described conservatives that there is nothing conservative in granting dictatorial police state power to the executive branch. There is nothing conservative about indefinite detention without trial. There is nothing conservative about rejecting habeas corpus and abolishing the Fourth Amendment. I quite agree with Roberts. This has nothing to do with terrorism. We are being stripped of liberty after liberty in order to make us easier to control and easier to jail when we start to get really, really mad about being reduced to poverty and powerlessness by our corporate masters. We need to start doing something about this now, but let's keep this in mind. Dragging us down the road to fascism is a bipartisan effort. If 2 years of Obama administration have shown us anything, they've shown us that the Democrats at the top have no more love for liberty and democracy than do the Republicans at the top. One thing we need is a third political party. Or as Gore Vidal quips, what we need is a second political party. So, ending on that familiar note of gloom and doom, I say thanks for listening. I hope you had some fun during this half hour, and I hope you'll tune in again next week. Happy New Year, and ciao.
To fight that war on terror, gotta get naked on the plane. Get naked.